Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, August 30th, 2019, as we cruise into the holiday weekend here in the U.S. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon.
Glad to have you with us on your way out for the holiday weekend. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad to have you here. Now, Andrew, I want to start with a piece that you wrote up this morning about iPhone hacks.
Yeah, so Google's Project Zero security team, they recently announced some vulnerabilities that they discovered in iOS. They actually discovered them earlier this year, but we're just finding out about it now. So they found some malicious websites, they call them. We don't know which websites they were, but they were taking advantage of some pretty serious 0 days in iOS. It sounds like it affected iOS 10 and later. And thankfully, they did, you know, of course, the responsible thing to do is to tell Apple about this. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it was patched with iOS 12.1.4 back in February.
Okay.
Now, it was serious because you didn't really need to do anything other than visit these websites. So they said thousands of iPhones a week were being hacked by this. And what it did was it stole your files and was uploading your live location data to their servers.
Oh, my gosh.
And it also had access to your passwords and iCloud keychain.
Oh, no.
And the databases of some end-to-end encrypted apps like iMessage, Telegram, and WhatsApp. So pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. So this was in iOS 10, but it's not fixed until iOS 12?
It sounds like it's completely fixed.
I mean,
the only version that they mentioned related to this was that got issued a patch was 12.1.4.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that would patch earlier versions too, as long as you have a phone that can accept software updates.
Which is why I was asking.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have a phone that stops at 10 or 11, then that was my question, was sort of if there was more going on with this. This sounds serious, because all you had to do was visit a website. Yeah. You didn't have to click OK or get a text message with a weird link in it, or, you know, view this GIF online or whatever. And that's really serious. I mean,
the only silver lining was that the malware wasn't persistent, which means if your iPhone restarted, it would be erased. But of course, that's still enough to do a lot of damage.
Yeah, because I don't restart my phone that often. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except when you do your updates.
Yeah. But like in general, like if I had visited one of these websites, it would be all the way between software updates before I restarted most of the time. It's pretty rare for me to reboot it if I, you know, just because I need to or whatever. So.
Well, I think the good news is these sites were not like Mashable and Gizmodo, but probably some really offbeat sites that normally wouldn't go to unless one were enticed into going there, or it was an unsavory site or something like that. Most reputable sites, if you stay on the beaten path, you probably wouldn't run across these sites. That's another silver lining.
Yeah, based on how these things usually go, I'm assuming people got to these websites by maybe clicking a link in a phishing email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if they got a text message with one of these things. So I don't think they were common, but still common enough to have thousands of people affected.
Yeah. Maybe it's like the bug in like advertisements. You go to a web page and then it pops up some other web page and it says like, you won, click here.
Yeah.
You know, it takes some of the wind out of the sails of Apple's argument that they only allow Safari as the default browser on iOS because of security. I kind of worry about Apple's coding practices a little bit. If they, through a web browser, you can dump the guts of a phone. I mean, that stuff like that should have been solved years ago. And there must be some fundamental flaw in WebKit or something going on with Safari that allows this kind of thing to happen. Mm-hmm. I wish that was some kind of simulator you could throw at the iPhone and try to break it in the browser mode and try to preemptively discover these kinds of flaws. Or it's just bad coding practices. I don't know. But it is kind of disheartening that a browser can spill the iPhone guts to a scurrilous website. Browsers shouldn't be written that way.
Well, my takeaway was the amount of access that you get by doing this. Like, I could see it not maybe being terribly complicated because there are very easy ways for, you know, open up a web page and it says, like, you know, find my location and show me the whatever's near me. You know, that's a pretty easy thing for Safari to do. So getting access to that information secretly doesn't seem like anything too terribly complicated, but being able to read my iMessage messages or my iCloud keychain data, like, how do you get to that from Safari? I think that's to your point, John, like, that to me was the takeaway of this, is that, you know, I didn't realize Safari was the front door to my entire device.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the thing I wonder about. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, right now in settings, there are some privacy and security toggles and like stopping cross-site tracking, blocking cookies. Maybe there should be another toggle for, like, hide the contents of this from websites.
Well, yeah. I mean, that would be helpful, but you shouldn't have to. Like, I think that's where I'm at. Like, yeah. I always thought Safari was a web browser. I didn't think it was a door. And
it does go to the issue, Kelly and Andrew, of clamping down on your phone to the point where things don't work anymore.
Yeah.
And then deciding, you know, if you really, really, really need it to work, think about how hard you need it and then turn it on grudgingly and then turn the setting back off or something like that.
Yeah.
But just being really relaxed about letting your phone do everything it's supposed to do because it has all these cool features and fun things. No.
But more, you know, I'm probably nowhere near as lax as some people are. Because, you know, we've talked about that on the show. Like, nobody who is on this podcast and most people who listen to this podcast are not people. Like, when we talk about, you know, people do this with their phones, like, you know, like, we tend to be slightly more advanced users, slightly more technical users, slightly more demanding users. And the thing that strikes me about this is, like, part of my lack of complete, like Mad-Eye Moody level constant vigilance is because it's Apple. I know Apple doesn't want my data. Apple doesn't want to know about me. Apple isn't interested in who I'm messaging when or anything like that. Like, they don't care. They don't care what the contents are, you know, all that end-to-end encryption with iMessage, which is great. And you know, and I know, you know, because Apple's been telling me forever, you know, we don't want that data. We're not interested in having it. It's not for us to worry about. It's, you know, that's not our business model. We don't make money off your data, so we don't want it. And so part of my, like, if I were an Android user, I would be a lot more vigilant. And I know that because I have to make my dad be vigilant because he has an Android phone. So when I talk to my dad about stuff, I always have to ask him, like, you know, has he updated recently? And, you know, is he keeping up to date on these different things? Because it's important on the Android side to make sure that that's happening. And, you know, part of my less rigorous security practice is because it's Apple. And it, you know, so that's the other thing about this that sort of bothers me. First of all, I didn't realize you could get to everything on my phone from Safari. And second of all, like, how,
especially, that's scary.
Yeah. And how did, like, how is it possible for this to happen with the encrypted stuff? Because part of my, like, secure knowledge, like, things I know for certain about my phone is, like, nobody can get into this unless I let them because it's encrypted. And it turns out that's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with encryption, as far as I understand it. It defeats man-in-the-middle attacks, but if one of the end devices is compromised, there goes the encryption.
Exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't so much, like, when I first read through the article, the impression I was getting was that you could see there was a WhatsApp database, there was an iMessage database, there was a Signal database. Not that you could see anything inside it. So then, like, going through it again and like, oh, no, that's not what that meant at all. And that was, yeah, that was a lot more alarming. I think the thing here that people need to take away from this is the thing that John says all the time, which is you should update. Whatever the update is, you should update. And the reason you should update is because there's a lot of security stuff that happens behind the scenes that people think is boring, that nobody wants to talk about. Because for a lot of people, it's not very interesting to talk about the security updates that are in whatever software update you want to apply. But it's important. And this is exactly the kind of thing that lets people know just how important it is. Yeah. Is that about sum it up, John?
Yep. Yep. That's it.
Okay. So now, once again, Andrew, you said this is fixed in 12.1.4?
Yes.
Okay. So
now, there was news that, you know, Apple had unfixed a vulnerability, but I don't think that had anything to do with this.
Okay.
As far as I know, that was just like that would let you jailbreak your phone.
Yeah, it was a jailbreaking. Well, it was whatever the vulnerability was that allowed you to jailbreak your phone. So yeah, which is not this. This is a totally different thing. So keep that in mind. We want to talk for a moment about our sponsor today. Our sponsor is OmniFocus, and OmniFocus helps you, as the tagline says, accomplish more every day. OmniFocus is available on macOS, and it's a universal iOS app, which comes with an Apple Watch complication. So if you really want to, you can view, or my favorite, add, and complete tasks right there on your wrist. It's pretty easy to do. And it remembers everything for you. It helps you finish your projects on time, and you can enter tasks from anywhere thanks to the debut earlier this year of OmniFocus for the web. So if you work someplace where you can't get to your Apple device, if you're one of those work PC people, then you can view and update tasks anywhere you've got a screen with a web browser. You can upgrade to the pro version and get even more customization for reminders and for forecasts, get different perspectives on your tasks. It includes AppleScript functionality and more. You can download your free 2-week trial at OmniFocus.com. And we'd like to thank OmniFocus for sponsoring the show today. Now, one of the other things we want to talk about briefly, as we're headed into back to school season, Labor Day weekend tends to be kind of when people are heading back, and that is Python. And the reason we want to talk a little bit about Python is because there is a version of Python that ships as part of macOS, but it's not necessarily the version you want to use, right, John?
Yeah, one has to understand that the progression of version numbers, starting in Python 2 and 2.5 and 2.7 and then 3 and then so on, is not a smooth progression. There's a dramatic jump. Python 2.x is the old system. Python 3.x came out in 2008 and is a major, major rewrite. There's incompatibilities between the code bases and the source code. So it's a whole new animal. And long ago, most users have upgraded to Python 3, except Apple didn't do that. Apple kept on shipping Python 2.7 in macOS because there was a lot of legacy code that was written in 2.7, and they probably felt like, well, if you need 3.x, you can go to python.org and install it. And there's an article that'll be in the show notes about how to do that. But the thing is that now we're at crunch time. The support for Python 2.7 is going to end in January of 2020, and there will be no more bug fixes and security fixes. And so Python 2.7 will be even more perilous to use. And so the upshot is that if you're a student or you're just beginning to learn Python, don't use the Python that ships with macOS. Use Python 3.7, I think it's what we're up to now. And the article in the show notes will show you how to download Python, the latest version of Python, and you'll be up and running in great shape. Now, in Catalina, Python 2.7 is what's called deprecated. And that's probably because Catalina came out before the end of support or it's going to be coming out in a few days, and the end of support doesn't happen until January 2020. So they couldn't outright just not include Python 2.7, so they decided to stay with the flow. Mm-hmm. I wish Apple had included Python, the latest version of Python, in every release, so you could choose between the two, and there was a obvious way to switch back and forth between the two, mm-hmm. or at least know which one you're using and be guided towards the latest. But Apple didn't do that, and that's been a sore point for a lot of people for a long time. So just mm-hmm. be aware that if you're just first learning Python, download 3 from python.org, follow the instructions that were in the article. Forget about Python 2.7. It's old. It's not used. It's used in a lot of legacy code, and people are going to be busily converting it over to the new code. Yeah. So if you've got an app that you suspect uses Python code, check with your developer to see if they're planning to upgrade it if necessary.
Also, if you're learning, you sort of want to learn the new way and not the old way. And in some cases, it's because the old way has disappeared or has fundamentally changed in some way that if you try it in a new version of Python, it just straight fails. So that's part of why. So if you're learning,
made the tough decision. He made the tough decision in 2008 to break backwards compatibility for the sake of moving forward with the language.
Yeah, I was going to say, of 2008.
Pearl dying because Pearl didn't make the hard break. Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind if you're headed back to school and you've got a introductory programming class on the agenda. You might want to make sure that you do that. And also because it's good to know in case you get some sort of weird error message. Like, it's time to start being aware of this. This is sort of like the 32-bit apocalypse that we saw on iOS and that we're going to see on macOS with Catalina, as a matter of fact. If you launched older applications under Mojave, you were getting that little warning about, like, this needs to be updated because you're not going to be able to use it anymore. And I don't know how they're going to put that sort of alert on things that rely on Python, but when you get it, it should be something that
notice.
Yeah, it'll work. Yeah, it'll work, but you know it. But we know it's not going to.
If something fails or there's a security problem, the developer won't be able to patch it because the patches won't be produced anymore. So
right. Yeah.
That's the deal.
Yeah, so just sort of keep an eye on that. John, when you were talking about which one to use, I wish that maybe there was not really a setup assistant, but I wish, like, the first time you invoked Python on your computer that it would say, hey, do you want 2 or do you want 3? You know, you can pick. And then it would just set that as the default, and then it would tell you, like, okay, you've decided to default to Python 3, but if you need 2, type this, and you can use it. You know, or whatever. Like, I wish there was some way to make it more clear.
That would be nice.
When you start.
I think Apple assumes that people who are writing Python code are geeky Unix users and know what they're doing. But for a lot of students who are first, you know, firing up their MacBook Air in class and trying to run Python, maybe they don't know all that they need to know.
Exactly. And that's part of why we want to talk about it. So if you know people who are talking to you about learning programming, maybe take a minute and share with them John's article about how to make sure you have the new version. I keep saying new, but it's from 2008. The new version of Python on your computer to make sure that you're going to be able to keep current going forward. So, Andrew, I know you're a big Python user.
Totally.
I'm totally kidding. Andrew's like, what have you heard? Okay. So, John, another thing I wanted to talk to you about just real quick. You have some interesting stuff in particle debris today.
Yeah, I found some additional information about Disney Plus. I had been wondering about 4K. Mm-hmm. And Disney's trickling out information, and it's sort of a fashion that indicates that they're really trying to rough up the competition. You know, we first heard the $6.99 price, fine. Access to the entire Disney library and Pixar and Lucasfilm and Marvel, right? Mm-hmm. So now they've come out with two waves of information. One, $6.99 a month is going to get you up to simultaneous access on 4 devices mm-hmm. in 4K at no extra cost. So if you were wondering if 699 was going to get you high definition or 4K, or whether you were going to have to pay more for 4K, no, $6.99 a month gets you 4K. And then, just a couple days ago, we learned that Disney's offering a three-year package for $141, which brings your monthly price down to $3.91. Take that, Apple.
Yeah. In case... So,
assuming that you want to commit for 3 years, you can get a really good price.
Yeah, this kind of struck me as, like, when I first read it, when I first read this, my first thought was, everybody thought $6.99 was so inexpensive, and it turns out that if you're paying $6.99, you're a sucker, because you could be paying way less.
Now, so, the price is going to go up over time, we know that.
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
But if you have a magical code from D23, where they were giving these out, then, and actually, I don't know if you still need a code. I think you can go to the Disney. There's a way to obtain a code, if I recall. I don't think they were particularly exclusive because they want everybody to sign up.
What does the code get you?
This pricing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's no end user upfront option for 3 years. You have to have a code to get the 3 year deal.
That I do not know.
I doubt that.
I don't think the codes are particularly specific, because I know at one point I heard that the website where you could go get this deal had crashed. A Disney website had crashed.
It hasn't officially launched yet. It launches November 12th in the U.S. Right.
Well, the service, right? But you can go get all ready to go now. So yeah.
Well, that's just part of what I was talking about the other day, demand creation.
Yeah.
Get people psyched up, give them codes, talk about it on social media, dribble out the information so that it's constantly in the news cycle.
Yep. Because how many times have we talked about it?
They're doing a great job.
Yeah, they are, because we keep talking about it all the time. So
yeah, we should be talking about Apple TV Plus and all the great deals and discounts and social media and fuss and the package deals and bundling, but we're not.
Well, I'd sure like to be.
I sure would be too.
Yeah. So, Andrew, with the new pricing, does this sound like something that maybe you're interested in?
To get the 3 year deal?
Yeah.
Probably not. Like, my approach would just be, and this is with Apple too, like pay the monthly fee, watch whatever I want as fast as possible, and cancel.
All right.
Is that called bulge viewing?
Yeah. Yes.
There you go. Yeah. Andrew won't be with us in November because he's sitting home binging everything on TV Plus, and we'll have him back in December. Mm-hmm. It'll be great. So, yes. Anyway, if you want to find out what else John has highlighted in Particle Debris, you can do that. There will be a link in the show notes. And if you are a person who is going to sign up for the new deal on Disney Plus, if you have more questions about the Python stuff, if you want to talk to us about the iOS hack that Andrew talked to us about at the top of the show, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And you can also leave comments in the show notes. And we look forward to your letters in this case. And John, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Mac Observer is actually off on Monday, which is Labor Day here in the United States. So I'd like to wish everyone an extended holiday weekend. I will talk to you Tuesday. And until then, be excellent to each other.